Hello again, Bob Chaundy here with another Considering Art podcast, in which I talk to an artist about their work and something of their life. Elizabeth Okoh is a Nigerian author and photographer based in London. She was brought up in Lagos, but studied for a degree in sociology and psychology at Sussex University. She began working as a professional photographer in 2017, and her practice involves documentary and conceptual work. Her subjects include series on the African diaspora and celebrating the power of women. She also has a commercial venture she calls Boudoir, in which she takes glamorous photos of women in intimate poses and clothing as a means of boosting their self-confidence. She had a debut novel called The Returnees published in 2020 about three Nigerians in the UK who decide to go back home. Elizabeth has a current photographic exhibition called Women on the Front Lines, which celebrates 10 key workers during the pandemic. It was at the gallery that I caught up with her. Lise, welcome to the podcast. Delighted to meet you.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here as well.
Tell us a bit about your background in Lagos, Lise. I mean, you said that when you're writing your memoirs, I seek to uncover events from my childhood that have impacted my life as an adult. What particular events did you have in mind then?
Oh, I think it really depends on what I'm writing about. Well, I guess when I was writing that sentence, it was things about like my childhood growing up in Lagos, Nigeria, and just what that was like for me, you know, having neighbors around who I could always like, I had friends in the neighborhood where I could go to the backyard, play, just using our hands and, you know, being tactile that way, quite different from today's digital age. And just events from my life as well, could be personal events, just uncovering how, like, you know, our socialization and our early childhood, you know, experiences go on to influence, you know, who we are as adults.
And when did you start taking an interest in photography?
Yeah, so it must have been around when I was 15 years old. So I had found like an old camera at home. So I come from a family of travelers. They've always loved traveling. I've been told I've been traveling since I was a baby. So I guess with that came documenting those experiences. And then when I was 15 years old, I didn't know we had that camera. I found it and I was just like, oh, interesting. And so at that point, I was quite interested in documenting, like, you know, events in my life, capturing friends, be it at church or in school, like during the last days of secondary school. I just thought, you know what, it would be amazing to take all these pictures. I probably would never see lots of these people again. How wonderful would it be, like, when I'm 60 or 70, you know, now at a point where I'm, you know, a pensioner, and I just have all these catalogs and albums to just pour and look back, you know, at things that happened in my life. And so that sort of what spurred me to start, taking pictures.
You say you liked or did a lot of travelling. Was that within Africa or over the world or what?
Yeah, so it was in different places. We lived in Lagos, Nigeria, but we had traveled to places like Porto Novo, we had traveled to Ghana, Cotonou, and then also to Europe at that time. So I remember the only trip I can actually remember was going to Portugal and Amsterdam, but I do have pictures where I see that I had been abroad as well when I was much younger, but those are memories I don't recall.
So what did your parents do then?
So my dad owned his own business. My grandma was a civil servant. And then my mom was a student at the time. My mom had me when she was much younger, so I pretty much grew up in that family home.
And you studied psychology and sociology at Sussex University here in the UK. What brought you here?
My mom brought me here. So my mom got married, moved to the UK with her husband at the time, and I stayed back for a few years just to finish my secondary school education, and the whole plan was once that was done I would join, you know, my immediate family and just live life. So that's basically what brought me to the UK. And so when I arrived I was 17. In Nigeria, I would have gone straight to university, but I learned here I would have to do my A-levels first. So I went to sixth form college, did my A-levels, and then from there went on to university.
Do you think your studies has in any way affected your subjects that you cover in your photography?
Definitely. I feel it's something innate, because when I think about it, I can't really explain why I'm interested in like observing people, why I'm interested in human behavior. But that was very much what made me go and study psychology and sociology. And in doing those subjects at A-levels, I found out like, you know, wow, you know, it just opened me to a world of like, you know, other researchers, social scientists who were like, you know, exactly that curiosity about human behavior, and were like, you know, discovering so many things. And so with that, it very much influences my photography in terms of like, you know, looking at society and just wanting to uncover stories. But rather than doing my research, should I say, in a scientific way, I do it more in a creative way, where I very much do primary interviews, you know, talking to people, depending on the subject matter, you know, the sort of category of people I'm interested in, talking to them, learning about their experiences, and then doing a photo shoot to sort of like, illustrate that and just share their stories as well.
Well, we'll talk about specifics in a minute, but when did you start taking photography seriously as an art form?
Yeah, so I would say it was in 2017. So all the while I'd been taking pictures and doing writing, I never really thought about myself as creative or an artist, interestingly enough. Oh. I thought it was just a hobby, something I just did. It never clicked in my head. And when I think back as well, when I reflect, I almost think it's because of the sort of society I grew up in, where arts are not really revered. Art is not really looked upon as something, you know, some like a career to go into. Usually, you know, parents who want their children to go into the sciences become, you know, either doctors or go into engineering. So I think I was doing all of those things, but to me they were just hobbies. I never, you know, had a thought about them to consider it. But along the line, when I was in university, I came across an ad looking for a writer, and I've always been curious, always open, because while I enjoyed what I was studying at university, I felt that there wasn't something that drew me so much and just clicked to be like, this is what I want to do in life. And so I was always open to opportunities. So when I saw that ad for a writer, I was like, you know what, I've always had this secret like thoughts of like, oh, I would love to be a writer, but I'd never thought I was good enough. So I was like, well, I'm just going to apply. You know, the worst that can happen is a no. And I applied, went through the rigorous process and got the job. And I think through getting that, my confidence in my ability started to grow a bit more. Seeing, you know, I was actually being paid to write, which at the time I thought was like the most ridiculous thing ever, because I just never thought I was, you know, on par to do that. So anyway, through gaining that confidence in my writing, it then dawned on me, I was like, oh wow, what if I took my photography seriously? And so when I had that thought, it made me excited, it made me curious. So I did some test shoots. I'm a self-taught photographer now, so I learned more about, you know, using my camera properly and, you know, everything about the exposure triangle, composition, all of that, how to edit as well using software. And through doing that test, it was a trial for me to see if I would actually loved doing it in a more professional capacity. And it just clicked. Everything just made sense and my passion just grew. And so I decided, yes, I would definitely love this as a career. And yeah, I just decided I would love to tell stories. And along the line, if someone wants to pay me to do a photo shoot for them, why not? I can make money on the side. But it very much grew into, okay, I want to do both. Not just, you know, not just have the art practice where I tell stories through photography, but I also like to make a livelihood through it. And yeah, that's what I continue to do today.
Well, let's look at some of your conceptual series. There's one you've done called Ileke, yeah, which is celebrating the power of women of African descent. What exactly is Ileke?
So Ileke is, in English, is waist beads. And so growing up in our culture, we do have waist beads women wear. Not everyone wears it, some people do, and it has different connotations, right? So in the past, women have used it for various reasons. You know, I think the popular one is for like sexual allure, to like, you know, entice a partner, I guess. But in the past, women have also used it for various other reasons. And for me in particular, for this project I did, I wanted to use this idea and this concept of, like, you know, women in the culture, you know, from puberty wearing waist beads for whatever reasons they've chosen to do that. But then we also, in that same culture that almost stifles our sexuality, that sees us just as one particular thing. And then when we come out of the culture and look broadly in diaspora right here in the UK and how black women are portrayed, you know, it's all about, you know, being strong, having strength, having resilience. But I feel like there wasn't enough avenue for us to like show other sides to ourselves. Yes, you can have this resilience for what we've been through, but when do we get to just, you know, see ourselves in a more feminine light, more, you know, vulnerable light? And for me, Ileke was using Ileke as a way to just show, you know, women can also be soft, we can be feminine, we can be sensual. It doesn't have to be sexual, where it's objectifying, but sensual for yourself to embrace your body and just celebrate who you are.
So is that why you photographed a lot of the people in the nude to accentuate their vulnerability?
Yeah, so for me it was more about highlighting, just putting the focus on their beads. So they are in the nude, but lots of it is backless as well, wanting to just show that sensuality as well. The human form, you know, especially women's bodies, can always be in some ways politicized, you know. It's either being used for, like, let's say in the media, being objectified, being used to sell products or services or whatever. But it's like once women decide, no, we actually want to embrace our bodies for ourselves, then all of a sudden it's like maybe that's vanity or maybe that's too much. And so showing them nude for me was just women accepting themselves. It's like, my body is not just for other people. It's not just for a man. It's not just for my children to nurture them. It's for me as well. And I can find pleasure in myself and embrace all of that.
But talking about claiming the body for yourself, I mean, you've also highlighted the terrifying facts of female genital mutilation, haven't you? Which is, I believe, it's as high as 25% of girls in Nigeria affected by.
Exactly. So I also wanted to use this project to highlight, you know, the really awful practices still going on around the world, and also the Ileke, as that almost juxtaposition. Here we're saying women can be sensual and we have these waist beads that sort of represent that. But in the other realm, we're stifling them and like taking away agencies of their own bodies, you know. You know, FGM is not, no one does that voluntarily, really. And even if they do, it's because they've been embedded in that culture that almost makes it normal and makes it seem like a rite of passage. And yeah, so I wanted to use this to highlight that practice. So I was at an exhibition and a woman who had been through that, you know, gave a speech and talked about her experience. I think that's when that really came to light for me, because before then, before the project, I didn't know that that was happening. And then I pretty much found that that still happens in some states in Nigeria. And it was just so surprising and shocking that till date, people still do that. And it just shows how you can live in a country, in one part of the country, and your reality is totally different from other people's.
You have a series you call your boudoir series, in which you take photographs of women of all shapes and sizes, dressed in their lingerie.
Yeah.
What was the idea behind that?
Okay, so I wouldn't say it's a series. It's pretty much like a practice I have now, and it's part of like my photography business, where it's all about empowering women again. I think through Ileke and doing that first and realizing much more about, you know, other women's experience, I could see that taking charge of your body and just, you know, using photography as an art form, as a healing space, does help women. And so boudoir, women feel confident. It helps them feel more confident. It helps boost their self-esteem. And women do it for all different reasons, you know. Some people are either celebrating themselves, or some people have been through different things in their past experiences, be it traumatic or negative, and they're on their own self-healing journey, and they do boudoir as a way to reclaim self, sometimes to explore themselves as well. So I've had a client in the past who's says she pretty much still feels like a child. She's in her 30s. She's lived at home all her life and has never really explored, you know, what being a woman is. And she feels like at this stage and age in her life, that's something she wants to do. And using boudoir to sort of explore that feminine side of herself and the sensual side of herself as well, you know, really helped her on that journey. So for me, boudoir would just be more about, you know, empowering women to feel more confident, to have more self-love within themselves. I very much believe having that self-love really impacts how you carry yourself, really impacts how you see yourself, and how you, you know, allow others to treat you. Really, it makes, you know, gives you more standards, meaning when you're in a relationship that doesn't serve you and is negative, you know you are worthy of being loved in the right way. You know you're worthy as a human being to be treated with respect and dignity, and that comes from self-love and knowing that no matter what this person is saying, no matter the external factors, within myself, I am worthy, I am of value, and I'm not going to take that. And it's a pity, you know, women go through a lot just because of that low self-belief and what is being, like, you know, subconsciously thought to us through right from socialization. You know, you begin to see gender differences in roles, in, you know, what women are expected to do, how they're expected to behave and carry themselves. And yeah, I think this process really gives women the space and the time to, like, almost, you know, take a stock of themselves and just come back and regain their own sense of self.
Another one of your series is called African Diasporan. Mm. And there you're investigating the sort of culturalization, changes that take place with people of first generation migrants here. What was it like for you when you first came here? Was that, I mean, apart from the weather, of course, I mean, what were the difficulties you found culturally? Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, I'm quite different in how I'm a delayed reactor, should I say. My emotions are quite slow and delayed, and so for me, I just saw it like, you know, this amazing opportunity, because you grow up in Nigeria and, you know, you watch Western movies and you hear about, you know, how everything seems to be great. It's supposed to be this land, you know, with milk and honey, as they say. And so you see, I saw it as a place, okay, I'm going to move and it's going to be filled with so many opportunities. I'm going to go to university there, bearing in mind the state of affairs in Nigeria as well is quite dire. When you think of the university, the educational institutions and stuff is not the best, you know, it could be much better. So being at that point in my life where I was going to university, if you ask me, would you choose to go to university in London or in Lagos? I definitely would have said London. So I just saw it as this grand, amazing opportunity that I had to grab with both hands and make the best of, really. I saw myself almost like, you know, one of the lucky few who could just easily travel. If you think about migration today, you know, people are going through a lot just to leave difficult places and, like, you know, all the wars and all the other things happening in the world. But for me, it was just like, yeah, I'm just traveling to go join my family. So anyway, coming here, so because of all of that background which I've just shared, it was just something positive, and I knew there'll be differences, but it was just like embracing that and just having that goal in mind that I was going to you know, make a better life for myself. But of course, you get here and things are a bit different, you know, the society is different, the culture is different, and trying to settle into that, more integrate into the culture, it wasn't easy. So like I said, I'm quite delayed in how I react to things, and I was just like, yeah, I'm fine, it's, you know, I feel lonely, but whatever, I'm gonna start school soon, I'll make friends. But then one day I was in college and everything, the emotions that had been piling, and I just ignored and just, you know, looked away from, and I just fell into, like, I don't know if I would say a sunken place.
And what
and
happened?
I just started crying. I had to rush to the girls' bathroom and lock myself in one of the toilets, and I was just crying.
What precipitated that?
I think when I look back at that day, so I'd run a bit late for one of my classes and I wasn't let in. And so I had to go to, like, the break lunch cafeteria to just, you know, sit out to wait till my next period. And I was thinking, oh, who can I, you know, call because I have this free period. And then the few friends, close friends I had at the time, they were in classes. There was no one I could even call on the phone. There was just no one. My mom, parents were at work. And I think that loneliness really just dawned on me. I felt so alone. Because back home, you know, even if, yeah, I was in a period, there'll be other people. Because the way classes are in Nigeria as well is quite different. So you're put in a class and you're with a set and you take all your classes together. There's no this moving around to different classes where you don't really know people and you have just your friends. So even if I wasn't, like, you know, taking a particular subject, I would know people from other, like, you know, years. There'll be people I'll be able to relate with. If people are, like, you know, playing a game or whatever, I could just walk up to them, join in. It was just more open. But I think the society here is not really. People stay in their cliques.
Did you find that was a common trait amongst the first generation diaspora that you interviewed?
Yeah, they pretty much had similar experiences, but they pretty much had those experiences way earlier than I did. So people would say, you know, when they traveled, the first couple of months was terrible. You know, they were sad, they felt lonely, they would cry. For me, that didn't happen till a year later.
So how did you approach that photographically?
There were different things I was exploring with that. So I was exploring the relationship between mothers and daughters. I was exploring the relationship between partners and just trying to see, like, what is different between how I was raised back home and how, you know, black people are being raised here. In the diaspora, and what those changes are and how does that impact, you know, the culture moving on. What do people take along with them in the culture, and what do people decide to leave? Because of course you're in a new society, and one way or the other, when I think about acculturation attitudes, so this is why I learned in sociology, and it's like a topic that I'm really interested in. Acculturation attitudes, you could either assimilate, which means you abandon all of your own cultures and values and take up only that of the host country, or you can integrate, and that means you have your culture still very much with you and you imbibe that of the new country as well, and you have that too. Or there's even the third, which I do not remember now what it's called. Or basically you just abandon everything and just, you know, chart your own path. So for me, that most people were integrating, taking up their culture, but also learning new from, you know, being in British society.
So how did you photograph all those concepts, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, so I had people sort of model, because this was very much conceptual as well. I did have some conversations with some of them, but, like, I had one of the models came in with her mother as well, and it was just using cultural elements like the fabrics and the backdrops, the clothing they wore, the accessories, and just showing that bond between mother and daughter and that bond they share. So yeah, I did that for that particular collection. For the partner one, so we grew up in a very much patriarchal society, which I must say is quite similar here as well. But of course, you also start to, like, you know, learn about other ways of being, other ways of living and having agency. So for me, it's like, how does that dynamic between couples, how does that, you know, translate here? Are those gender roles still very much in place, or is it shifting? And so you would see in one of my photographs, I have the man actually serving the woman instead. And she's, you know, dressed in this beautiful gown, a couture gown from a designer I worked with. And she's, like, in her, resting in her feminine, still very much, you know, a woman, but the roles are reversed. So it's like, how does society view that now?
Is the African or Nigerian idea of masculinity problematic?
I wouldn't say the whole idea is problematic, but yes, it is. And I think it's not even just a Nigerian thing. It's a world thing because it's still very much prevalent in so many societies and cultures around the world. There's something called misogyny, which is still very much in the UK as well. Yeah, so yes, but we do have a lot of that in Nigeria for sure. And I think, yeah, the culture is not really catching up to the times.
Now, you've written a book called The Returnees, a work of fiction. I was interested in the fact that you chose to focus on Nigerians who are leaving London, going back to Lagos. Why did you do that?
Yeah, so at that period, the idea came to me during a period in my life where I just finished university and I was going to networking events because I was very much, like I said, I started pursuing, you know, my act practice more. And so I was going to networking events, network with other people. I was very much interested in entrepreneurship as well. And that was sort of like the prevailing conversations in most of those events, where people who had, like, you know, either grown up some parts of their lives in Africa and moved here and, like, you know, studied here and all of that, but were thinking of going back to, like, start businesses. Social media was becoming bigger, you know, opening, you know, the world's eyes a bit more towards going on in the African continent and just showing, like, you know, life is not what you've just been fed by the media, you know. It's not all about starving children. There's actually industries happening and industries growing. And so through social media as well, I was able to see some of, like, you know, my friends or people I just connected with on Instagram, you know, doing their photo shoots, pursuing their artistic, you know, careers, being designers, you know, in the fashion industry and all of that. So the merge of all of that idea of people here wanting to go back and seeing what's, you know, happening in the industry, in the creative industry as well in Nigeria, sparked that idea. And so I thought I would have, you know, British Nigerians pretty much born and raised in the UK but wanting to go back home for various reasons. They all don't go back home willingly. So I have my main protagonist who has suffered a heartbreak and wants a clean start, and she's very much enthralled as well by, you know, the fashion industry back home because she is a fashion person herself. So she decides to take on a job role and moves back for that. I have another protagonist, Cynthia, who's just finished university, and she's in this time of life which I think most of us go through where we've studied something but we pretty much don't still know what we want to do with our lives. So she's in this dilemma, and I think her parents have just had enough. They're like, how can you quit your job? You have no, like, direction, you know. And it's that thing of, like, so I've spoken to Nigerians who grew up here, and I think growing up they have that sort of threat or ultimatum which some parents hang over their heads, like, if you misbehave, we're going to send you back home to learn a thing or two. But Cynthia's comes pretty much late, where she's now like an adult in society here, but her parents are like, we've had enough, we need you to, like, get to grips with reality. And so we do have the National Youth Service program which we do in Nigeria once you're graduated from university, basically serve for a year. And so her dad basically ships her back home to the capital in Abuja to live with his brother, and she should just live that 1 year and, you know, understand life can be pretty much different for her. And then the third protagonist is Kian, who is like a budding musician. He really wants to make it big. At that time as well, Afrobeats was beginning to gain momentum internationally, and I just thought it would be, you know, really interesting to see what it is actually back home for those youngsters trying to break it out and make it big. But this is someone who has known only London all of his life, but he's also, you know, wanting to jump on this trend, I guess, and make a name for himself. So he pretty much leaves his own sort of genre of music to decide he wants to be an Afrobeat star. And for him, what's the best way than to go back, you know, to the city where those stars are born? And so he goes back to Lagos as well.
Okay, well, I won't ask you what happens, otherwise we'll give it away.
You'll have to read the book.
Yeah, exactly. Your current exhibition is called Women on the Front Lines, which is looking at all those unsung heroines who kept the country going during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Who did you choose to put the spotlight on?
Yes, so women on the front lines. So there are 10 women in the exhibition, all from different industries, from NHS to the funeral services, postal services, transportation, education, welfare. So I really wanted to highlight, you know, the different essential industries that pretty much kept, you know, the country going on while the pandemic was happening. You know, I think in society we've in the past and maybe even currently lauded particular job roles, job titles. But when it came to the breaking point, we clearly saw the roles that actually are essential and keeps us going, you know. And during one of my reflective moments as well, I was just like, because I couldn't work, I'm a photographer. And just even apart from the pandemic, there was lots of social upheaval at that time as well. And there were some mornings I would just wake up not wanting to do anything, couldn't believe the state of the world. But there are people out there working, right? You know, there are people making sure we can go to the groceries and get our food. There are people making sure we can still get our posts delivered. There are people making sure, like, the sick are being taken care of as much as possible given the pandemic. And it's like trying to put myself in their shoes is like, how did they cope? How were they able to do this? Because yes, it's their role, but as a human, how do you make that choice that there's this virus that is very contagious, killing people at a fast rate, but I'm still gonna go out and work, you know, for people who you don't know? So I just really wanted to learn about their stories, what that was for them mentally, what it was for them psychologically, what it was for them, even their physical realities. Like, you're living at home, how does your partner feel about you going out every day, coming in contact with hundreds of people? You have a child, how was that for you, that struggle, knowing you can come home and infect your child? So I really wanted to understand that, but most importantly for me, really celebrate them for the work they've done, pay a tribute to them. In the past, I've been on, you know, arts projects where we're celebrating heroines from the past, you know, people who did important roles who were never celebrated or like acknowledged at the time, and we're just doing it now, but these people are long dead. So I was like, no, this is like, you know, I feel, well, I do say the pandemic is a marker of my generation, the generation we are in now. Up until, you know, the pandemic, nothing of such a huge scale had happened. And it's like, as an artist, so there's this quote by Nina Simone which I really appreciate, and it's like, an artist's duty is to tell the story of the times. So I felt like it would be a disservice to not pay tribute to these women here and now while they're alive.
Well, give us an example, Lise, of one person and how you photographed her.
With the project, I basically had an idea of how I wanted it. I wanted it to be a bit moody, but with like some sorts of lights that shone bright on them and showed. So I do transformational photo shoots, as you asked before. That's sort of like my boudoir style, but not photographing them in a boudoir style, but more in a glamour style. So you walk around, you see these women every day, just in your uniforms, like every other person. But with the photo shoot, there's this transformational effect where they're glammed up, they're pampered, they're, you know, styled in beautiful dresses, and then put on set. And so yeah, and so we just you will have, I cannot really describe the whole of the visual element. I think your listeners will have to come and see the exhibition. It's here until the end of March, and yeah, you'll be able to see. And for me, I also wanted to take parts of there was something about that national pride, because they didn't do their jobs just for themselves. It was pretty much a selfless act. And so I used the colors from the British flag to like create the set, and you will see that, and that's what those colors signify in the portraits.
Well, good luck with the exhibition, Lise. Thanks so much for talking.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really exciting, and really feel honored being on your platform.
Well, it's been an honor for me too. Thanks.
Thanks,
Elizabeth Ocko. Thanks for listening. Join me, Bob Chaundy, to consider more art next week. Bye for now.